This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
It's 7:44. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning. This morning's Israel Report with Avi Abelau. Avi is the voice of the Pulse of Israel broadcast program. Avi, good morning to you. How are you doing?
Good morning, Howard, as well as possible. How are you?
I am good, thank you. Starting off with some of the news, I see the 20 rockets from Lebanon. 20 rockets have been fired from Lebanon overnight. This is unrelenting, isn't it?
Yeah. Listen, we've been talking about this for months, and the only way it's going to stop is when Israel puts a stop to it. I mean, it's pretty simple. The question is, when will that happen? And even though this isn't being said out loud, the core reason why Israel has not has been tremendous pressure from the Biden administration that they don't want us to ruin the election chances of a Biden-Harris election win, to keep things as quiet as possible and not make more issues for them. They want to solve it and end it, even though they're forbidding us from doing the one thing that will end it, which is by use of military means.
So does that mean, following your logic or following this logic, that it will, in the north at least, almost tick over until November, after which there's a chance we'll see an escalation once once the election is settled one way or another?
Very possibly. Obviously, everything depends on who wins the election. But the real core issue that we should be focused on, and this is what most Israelis have internalized, is the longer we kick the can down the road, the bigger the problem becomes. So with all of the desire to want to listen to the pressure and not upset an American administration, the longer we push off doing what we have to do to end the rocket attacks from the Iranian forces in Lebanon, one, the longer we have 80,000 Israelis not returning to their evacuated homes up north, and it's just allowing Iran and Hezbollah to strengthen themselves and further be prepared to do even more damage and hurt us even more and make it harder for us when we finally do what we have to do. And that's definitely what Israelis want. They want us to take care of this issue as soon as possible and end it. And everyone's scratching their heads. Why? Again, I gave you one of the most plausible reasons why. But Israelis are scratching their heads. It makes no sense. What normal country in the world wouldn't do what is necessary militarily to end a military threat that literally has caused the evacuation of 80,000 people from their homes and has literally destroyed homes and destroyed communities? It makes no sense. So whatever has to be done, the sooner the better for the benefit of us in the region.
That said, the United States is obviously yields a lot of power, and it yields power because it is a deterrent for Iran, and practically and financially, it's an important supporter of Israel. What rights do you think that gives them to dictate or to pressure according to their own interest? And how do you balance that, I guess, is the question.
Well, we can have a wonderful philosophical discussion about the abuse of power by empires in the world, or we could just understand that that's the reality of the world. In every generation, there is a world power. There are empires. There's good and there's evil. And certain powers abuse the power they have because of the position they're in. And again, we're Jews, so we have a thousands of year history. All we have to do is go back to the Bible, and we read the Bible stories of the various kings, and you see how the kings had to make decisions, because Israel was a tiny country even back then. And back then, we were surrounded by bigger empires, the Babylonian Empire, the Egyptian Empire, right? Just two of many. And the kings and the prophets were always trying to come up with decisions. Wait, what do we do? How do we protect Israel? Which empire do we ally with in order to best protect ourselves? And sometimes we have the 2020 hindsight, so we could look at the stories and say, no, you're picking the wrong ally, because that's right. Exactly what happens.
Right.
But again, where the reality is, the Jewish people and the Jewish state of Israel, we're in a situation where we have to be situated and align ourselves geopolitically in such a way that we're able to do what we have to do. And we are experiencing the problem of being too connected with one superpower of the world, and not having more of a multi-pronged approach, because we're totally dependent upon America. We've had, just American agreements, even the agreement that Israel made with President Obama, regardless of the amount of money, like everyone says, oh, the amount of money is unbelievable. What an unbelievable deal. No, you're looking at it the wrong way. Governments like to give away a lot of money. The more money they give, the more dependent they're making countries become on them. That's not good if you want to be an independent country. But it's more the price we had to pay for all that money, because the Obama financial deal of aid to Israel, which is all military aid that goes back to America in a sense, it's not just for Israel, it basically tied Israel's hands from being able to purchase weapons or ammunition from any other country, stopping us from being able to produce our own weapons or own ammunition. So it was a further nail in the coffin of tying our hands to be totally dependent upon them, which brings us to today's situation, that one of the ways the Biden administration is forcing Israel and threatening us not to do what we have to do in Lebanon is by literally withholding weapons that we need in order to fight our wars, because we don't have those weapons, we don't have those bombs, unless we receive them from the United States of America. So the first lesson that the Jewish people should learn, and I'm not just saying the state of Israel, but the Jewish people, is that if we want to be able to protect ourselves, we can no longer allow ourselves to make such horrendous deals with foreign powers, no matter how big they are in the world. We always have to hold on to our independence to be able to produce our own weapons, our own munitions, to be able to fight our wars and not be stuck in a situation where when we have to fight and defend ourselves, we're not able to because we're not receiving the weapons from our ally who is using that as a pressure, as threats, in order to stop us from doing what we have to do in order to fulfill their needs, their geopolitical interests, which are not our interests.
Mm, mm. It's obviously it must be for the residents of the North, people who have been internally displaced, absolutely infuriating that this just continues and continues. Is there a chance that part of this is to try and finish in one area, Gaza, where there has been some significant breakthroughs, before focusing the attention, Israel's attention in the north, on the north?
That has definitely been a reason used, and they're saying that we just have too many forces dealing with Gaza, and we can't start an offensive against Hezbollah and Iran and Lebanon until we're able to release some of those forces and send them up north. That definitely has been used. And I imagine that we're not able to do a full attack to tackle the and end the aggression from the Iranian and Hezbollah forces in Lebanon, but we definitely could be doing much more even without that. Again, on the one hand, things are different. On the other hand, things are the same. You go back to the 1967 war, Israel fought three fronts in 6 days.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and we're in a much better situation today than we were. And then you look at Hamas, and with even though, yes, Hamas, we have to go house by house in such
a a very different
wars,
type of a battle. Mm.
Correct, but still, but Hamas is a very... It's the weakest enemy we've ever had to fight. So it's hard for me to accept that. That, I mean, again, I was part of the Northern Command for years and training every year, and we were always told the next war is up north. The next war is the next major war is up north. That's what we were training for. Mm. And Israeli officials were always saying, yes, of course, we're ready for a multi-front war. I mean, again, Israel, we're not stupid. We know we have multi-front enemies. So all of a sudden, to be in this war right now, and where we're putting most of our forces fighting against the weakest enemy we've ever faced before, it's a heinous enemy, but it's the weakest in terms of actual manpower and firepower and no air force and no tanks, nothing. But to think that because we don't have enough forces, we are using too many forces in Gaza, we can't fight up north. I think that's just an excuse, and that's not really the true story.
Getting a few messages. We are aware of some of you having transmission breaks. We are looking into that, and hopefully that'll be sorted very shortly. I did not fulfill my mission. The commander of the IDF's 8200 intelligence unit has resigned. And this was a very, very heartfelt resignation, I thought, by Yossi Sariel, the Brigadier General, acknowledging that his unit failed to act to prevent October the 7th. It obviously hits very, very hard when we hear these types of these resignations, and we see the amount of information that did come the way around this Hamas attack, and that it was ignored. What is the feeling around this when hearing of these types of resignations?
That's a good question. I'll answer it in this way. I think the feeling is. I'll give you two little stories. Story number one, I had an officer when I was in the Army who was thrown out of his position because he allowed his son to borrow his Army Jeep. And for that, he was one of the top officers, and he was thrown out of the Army for that. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, you're talking about an Army that instills in its officer corps the philosophy of taking personal responsibility. So if you are in a situation and you make a mistake, you take personal responsibility. You do not run away from taking personal responsibility. So the feeling of many Israelis is that all of the high officers who were involved, who were there, that were in power, whether in intelligence or whether in operations, and they failed to act to protect Israelis on October 7th, they should have all resigned on October 8th. Not a year later. I mean, they all went against the IDF ethos of taking personal responsibility, knowing that it was having the intelligence or not taking care of making sure the intelligence got to the right places, or making sure you didn't even make sure that certain intelligence technologies were in place, or that the soldiers were ready that morning that they were supposed to be according to regular protocol. It's like I can go through so many mistakes that if just the regular protocol was followed, October 7th wouldn't have happened. And all the officers in charge who should have been making sure that regular protocol was followed, and I'm just talking about regular protocol, that would have stopped October 7th, yet none of them resigned on October 8th. That a lot of Israelis have been screaming to the heavens. Like,
really? I would have thought that it would have been perhaps even worse had they resigned on October the 8th because of the fact that that this was a country at war. This wasn't a time for that. But it seems... I would have thought that waiting, whether it was weeks or months, is neither here nor there, but waiting until there was some form of stability would have been the more responsible thing to do, surely.
It could be. One could argue about exactly when that would be, but it would have been soon after and not a year later.
Right.
Definitely been plenty of time until now. And again, this is only one of the first. I mean, there are a number of them up there.
Yes.
And again, I'm a big believer. I want everyone to understand. I still serve in the Israeli reserves. I have two sons serving, one going in and out of Gaza, one just finished his reserve in Gaza. I'm a big believer in the Israeli soldiers. But I'm also cognizant of the fact that sometimes officers, no matter how high, make mistakes. And yes, you pay a price for the mistakes you make. And here we're seeing that our – and then there, everyone is replaceable. everyone is replaceable. It might be challenging, but everyone is replaceable. We all die at the end, and we're all replaced in whatever we're doing in life in one way, shape, or form. No one is not replaceable. So there is a big disappointment in seeing that the ones who've been teaching us for years about personal responsibility, and here Israel experienced the biggest fiasco, military fiasco, at least in our generation, probably since Israel's establishment. And yet they're all still in the position. And we even have the proof of Israel's chief of staff and one of the other main intelligence guys. They said we're only going to leave when we can ensure that the people taking over for us are people who we approve of. That's ludicrous.
Yeah, well, that is ludicrous. I think that exactly. I think you've kind of blown that right. Avi, I do need to leave it there because we are going to the 8 o'clock news. Avi Abelau is the voice of the Pulse of Israel broadcast program. He joined us this morning for the Israel Report. It has gone 8 o'clock. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands.
Hi, it's Barry Cohn from the Blue Agency. Israel is currently facing one of its biggest challenges ever. All of Klal Yisrael is praying for the safety of our soldiers and the return of the hostages. We hope and pray that our soldiers and security forces will prevail and that they will all return home speedily and triumphant. We hold the hands of our clients and friends who have children serving in Tzahal, who are protecting Israel and Jews around the world. May Hashem protect us all.